This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
EDU.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. I am Matt Ludke sitting in the Iron Throne. I've got Alex Sharg in the booth. We have tons to talk about today. Of course, tonight at 8 p.m., the NFL draft, the first round of the NFL draft, rather, kicks off on ESPN. And oh man, there are several options for the Lions at number five. It's a big draft as far as building your team in the trenches, and there's lots of options when it comes to that fifth pick. We'll get to that a little bit later. We've also, of course, got to mention the Red Wings push for the playoffs. They are currently in eighth place. We'll get to that later. But I think first off, big news as far as Spartan basketball is concerned. Yesterday, we got a new commitment for the 2013 class. His name is Alvin Ellis. He is a 6'5 shooting guard from Chicago De La Salle. Now, he is a former Minnesota commit after Minnesota parted ways with Tubby Smith. He reopened his recruitment and, of course, signed with the Spartans yesterday. Now, the last time a Tubby Smith commit decommitted from his school and reopened his recruitment, he ended up coming to MSU, and of course, that was Draymond Green. So if precedence has anything to do with this, I think Alvin Ellis will look really good in that Spartan green. And you look at what kind of player he is, he averaged 20 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists as a senior. He shot from over 40% from beyond three-point line, or beyond the three-point line, in his last two seasons in high school. And, you know, when you kind of size him up, it's more or less a Brandon Kearney with a jump shot. And Kearney left the program earlier in the season. He transferred to Arizona State. And it seemed like right after he left, the injuries really started piling on. And you could definitely sense the need of another wing player who could, you know, come off the bench, be reliable, give us a few minutes here or there. And it seems like Ellis fits that bill. He's a three-star recruit for people who care about that sort of thing. But, from all indications, it seems like he might be kind of a four-year program guy. And I think, even in the age of one-and-dones, you need players like this who can come in, fill their role in their early years, and then maybe take a bigger role as they get older and become upperclassmen. Now, Alex, when you look at this signing, you know, do you see him redshirting? Do you see him coming in and playing right away off the bench? How do you see him contributing?
Well, the funny thing is, Tommy Smith must be knocking himself on the head. I mean, from Draymond Green, now Alvin Harris, who consistently will have a role in the next 4 years with any program that he basically will come into. Yeah, a huge loss for Tubby. I mean, I really feel bad for the guy. But in terms of what Alvin Harris's what Alvin's role will be with this, with the program, I think it also relies on if Payne comes back. If Payne comes back, I think Izzo wants to fit that similar bill of what the program was like when Brandon Kearney was in it, you know?
Right, and, you know, when you look at the kind of backcourt depth we'll have going forward, now, obviously we have Appling and Trice kind of holding down the point guard spot. Gary Harris has obviously locked down that starting shooting guard role. But, you know, when you have Denzel Valentine coming off the bench as well, he can play a multitude of positions, basically, you know, 1 through 3 at least. So you look at that, it never hurts to add another bit of wing depth, and especially if the guy can shoot like he did in high school, I think he's going to carve out a nice little niche as a freshman. And then I think, you know, as far as, you know, his sophomore through senior seasons, potentially, the sky's the limit, because, you know, we've seen guys come in like this, maybe a little bit under the radar, and then they sort of develop into better players as they get going. And, you know, his offensive game seems to fit the bill. Izzo enjoys his length and versatility, which are two words you love hearing about any basketball player. And he says he can defend multiple positions, which if you're going to be playing for Tom Izzo, you better be able to defend. And I think, you know, obviously as far as playing time goes, that is going to be the big thing. Callers, let us know what you think. 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. Do you see Ellis contributing next year? Are you excited about this class? You know, going into the year, we were kind of all in on Jabari Parker. Obviously, that didn't work out. He chose to go to Duke instead. But I think, for losing out on Parker, getting two guys of the caliber of a Gavin Schilling, the forward from Nevada, and an Alvin Ellis, again, a shooting guard from Chicago, I think that's quite a consolation prize. I don't think we have anything to be ashamed of. These guys are going to be players that kind of develop over the course of a few seasons, and those are the type of players you need to consistently build a program. I mean, one-and-dones are great, but I think we saw the downside to that this year with Kentucky, where, you know, they had a great year last year, won the title, and then this year they were, you know, awful, out of the NIT in the first round, losing to Robert Morris. So, you know, there's two sides to the coin as far as one and dones are concerned. And I think if you want a program like the one we have here at MSU, you need guys like this who are going to come in, fill a role, and eventually, you know, start, you know, carrying the load as far as the scoring and, you know, the team is concerned in general. So I am personally very excited about this signing. And again, if it turns out anything like Draymond Green did, not to say that it will, I think that could really, really be a help. And, you know, when you look at the injury history on this team, you know, we had Appling nicked up. Trice couldn't keep his face / head out of harm's way for seemingly the majority of the season, battling the broken nose and concussions. And, you know, obviously Dawson is still rehabbing that knee. So, you know, when you look at a guy like this who can come in, come off the bench, even if he's playing 10 minutes a game, I think it bodes well for the team and as much depth as you can have on the wings you need. Because as far as college basketball goes these days, you know, you need as many players as you can that can contribute. And, you know, we looked for things from Russell Bird this year and it didn't quite work out. Now, you know, in addition to Ellis and Schilling, we also get Kenny Kaminsky, who redshirted this year after shoulder problems. So, you know, whether or not he'll be able to consistently contribute, you know, as a forward remains to be seen. And you know, if any previous history of Spartan injuries is to be considered, it's an unknown quantity at this point. So if you can bring in a new guy like an Alvin Ellis, I think it bodes well for the program, both in terms of depth next season and maybe a little instant impact, but certainly for the depth of the future, because you know, we're going after some big time prospects in 2014, and it's nice to have a nice base of talent already there. And you know, had we only used one of the scholarships this season, I think we would have been maybe setting ourselves up for a little bit of disappointment next year. So welcome aboard, Alvin Ellis. Looking forward to seeing you in a Spartan uniform, and looking forward to you contributing on the hardwood next year and for years to come after that. So hats off to Ellis, and welcome to Spartan Nation. We all welcome you with open arms. So, you know, you look at the Spartans' future, and you know, it's looking brighter every day. Everything, I think, hinges still on Adrian Payne's decision, which of course has not been made yet, or I think that would have led the show. Now, he has until the 28th to decide if he will declare for the NBA draft or not. You know, whether he does or not kind of depends on where MSU is slated in the preseason polls. If he comes back, all indications are we are a top three preseason team. If not, we'll drop maybe a level lower, somewhere in the top 15, I would assume. Either way, Michigan State will be sitting pretty for next year. Definitely one of the favorites for the Big Ten title. And, you know, we're definitely going to be there. But if Payne does indeed come back, we'll be nationally elite. And, you know, around the Big Ten, as far as college basketball is concerned, another player making waves this week, Tim Frazier, the guard from Penn State, was granted a sixth year of eligibility. And, Alex, I might be crazy here, but I think Penn State might surprise some people next season. You know, they had a terrible season this year. They had the one big win versus Michigan and then pretty much nothing else. But they've got some talented players. They could make a move next year.
Yeah, and of course, with all of the difficulties they've had to encounter with the Paterno situation and affecting their program, I mean, the players are sticking with it. They're not letting that get ahead of them.
And you know, they have a guy like a DJ Newberry, who's you know, a really solid guard, and then Tim Frazier, who was one of their best players the year before. Of course, he missed the season due to injury. So you look at that, and maybe their next year is Iowa, a team that had kind of been in the basement for a few seasons, but then they started to build some momentum. And you look at next year, and Iowa is in preseason top 25s. They're kind of the dark horse pick to compete in the Big Ten. But I think Penn State is, you know, obviously they couldn't get much worse than they were. They were a pretty awful basketball program. But as they move forward, I think there's definitely the potential for growth. I think, you know, you look at the players they have and bringing back a guy like a Frazier, they've got some really great guard play. And if Michigan was any indication this year, guard play is really what you need to advance in the tournament and have a good season. So I think they're going to surprise some people. I don't think going into Happy Valley is going to be as easy as it was this year. I think they might be a program on the rise. Now, granted, you know, they were at the bottom of the barrel, so there's really only one direction to go. But I'm glad to see them maybe making a move up the Big Ten ladder. So you look at that, and, you know, that kind of wraps up the look at the Big Ten basketball news. But, of course, we have a little NBA here before the break. Mark Gasol was awarded the Defensive Player of the Year. He's the center for the Memphis Grizzlies. They allowed a league-low 89.3 points per game, and he was a large part of that, organizing the back line and barking out instructions for the rest of his teammates. And if you're keeping track of the NBA season awards, Paul George of the Indiana Pacers won the NBA Most Improved Award, and J.R. Smith of the New York Knicks won the Sixth Man of the Year Award. And just a quick recap of the scores last night. The Thunder blew a 15-point lead on a 21-2 Houston Rocket run, but rebounded to win 105-102. They're up 2-0 in the series. The Pacers beat the Atlanta Hawks 113-198 in a game that I think the entire nation slept through. They lead 2-0 in that series. And, of course, the Spurs beat the Lakers. Surprise, surprise, no Kobe Bryant. They win 102-91. So, you know, the series moving forward in the NBA, still, I think, maybe two or three road victories in the playoffs so far. Seems like the home teams have dominated. But you know what they say? The playoffs don't start until the road team wins a game. So it remains to be seen if those series will go, you know, four games or much, much longer. And, you know, the door is still open in just about all those series, except for maybe Miami. So, you know, you keep your eyes on that. That'll develop over the weekend. Of course, they've got eight games this weekend. So things will change. You can count on that in the NBA playoffs. Now, I think we're going to wrap up this first segment. When we come back, we're going to talk all sorts of stuff about the Lions, the future Spartans going into the draft, and more. It'll be a NFL draft blowout. So stay tuned for more sports talk here on WKAR AM 870.
We've come to expect the government to track our overseas travel. We know police can subpoena phone records, and many of our fingerprints are on file. But now our tweets are part of our identity and a significant factor in some criminal investigations. I'm Neil Conan. Twitter's reach plus an unauthorized biography of Superman. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
We've come to expect the government to track our overseas travel. We know police can subpoena phone records, and many of our fingerprints are on file. But now, our tweets are part of our identity and a significant factor in some criminal investigations. I'm Neil Conan. Twitter's reach plus an unauthorized biography of Superman. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Thanks for listening today, and here's a look at the weather forecast as we head toward the weekend. Partly sunny with a chance of light rain this afternoon, high near 48 degrees. Mostly clear overnight with lows in the lower 30s. A mostly sunny day on Friday with highs in the upper 50s, and Saturday's forecast mostly sunny with highs in the mid-60s.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Matt Ludke here, Alex Sharg in the booth. And tonight is the night. 8 o'clock ESPN, the NFL Network will also have coverage. It's the NFL Draft from New York. There's a lot of intrigue this year. Usually by this time, we've already heard about the contract negotiations between, you know, the tentative number one pick, and usually it's a quarterback. In fact, the last four seasons, it's been a quarterback. But this year, things are going to be a bit different. No highly rated QB on the list. You know, you see some teams in their mock drafts taking a quarterback as high as 8. You wonder how much people love guys like Geno Smith and Ryan Nassib. But this year, it's all about the hog mollies, both on the offensive and defensive lines. And of course, the Lions, as Mitch Albom wrote quite hilariously today, the Lions' luck, the year that all of the tackles are the highest rated players, and there's three that are coveted by everyone in the league, we end up with the fifth pick. Now, you know, in certain light, it's kind of a relief because by the time we get to that fifth pick, there maybe won't be as many choices available as if, you know, we had had a higher pick. But at the same time, you look at guys like an Eric Fisher out of Central Michigan, a Luke Jokel out of Texas A&M, or a Lane Johnson out of Oklahoma. Those are the top three offensive tackles. Those are the guys that are probably the biggest need for the Lions, especially with the departure of a Backus and an Agoster Chereles. So you look at the offensive line, they definitely need help there. But it doesn't look like all one of those guys will be available. It's going to be definitely interesting. There's multiple guesses as to who's going to go where. The Free Press actually has a nice little chart here. 26 national analysts have the Lions taking six different players with the number 5 overall pick. And of course, those guys are, you know, included are Lane Johnson, Jokel, and Fisher, along with Ziggy Ansah from BYU and Deion Jordan from Oregon. So you look at that list, and Alex, when you look at their spot, number 5, you look at some of the mock drafts where it has those three tackles being gone. If they are gone, who are you taking? Are you going with an Ansah or a Jordan as a defensive pass rusher off the edge? Or do you go with the D. Milliner, who's recently, you know, revealed that, you know, he's had a bunch of surgeries? There's a little injury red flag with him. Do you go with the lineman or a corner?
Right. Now, the D. Milliner hype has definitely gone down. You know, I've been saying all year that the best pick for the Lions would be D. Milliner. I still think that. But if the offensive tackles go and they don't have any options on the board, you look at Ansah, you look at Jordan. Remember when Matt Millen was general manager and we already had a plethora of good wide receivers, we drafted more because we wanted elite. Now, if we draft Ansah, if we draft Jordan, we have a great defensive line already. Not to say we have great pass rushers off the edge, but with Sue and Fairley and getting a defensive end in Ansah or Jordan, that would make us an elite defensive line, even though we lost Averill. Now, is the same philosophy relevant today, although Millen isn't there? I'm not so sure. So if the Lions do take a defensive end, I think that is being a little bit contradictory to what Matt Millen used to do for this Detroit Lions team. But I think that influence still rides with that organization that maybe we can be elite in one area, whether it's secondary by drafting Milliner or being elite with our defensive line. And maybe biting the dust and saying, you know what, sure, we didn't get an offensive tackle to replace Chereles and Backus, but it's not irreplaceable.
Right, and you know, as far as the strength of this draft, again, it is the offensive and defensive lines. So it seems like maybe Milliner would be, you know, a step ahead of the rest of the corners in the draft, whereas there's pretty good depth at the offensive line and defensive line positions. But again, I mean, you win games in the trenches, and, you know, if we have a quarterback who we're paying, you know, tens of millions of dollars, it seems wise to kind of keep him on the field as long as possible. And, you know, we've obviously seen Stafford have some trouble with injuries, so maybe that kind of pushes up the priority on a lineman. Now, and it's not just like these tackles are the only ones available and the only ones who are going to be any good. I mean, you've got guys like Chance Warmack from Alabama, Barrett Jones from Alabama, basically anybody who played at Alabama, I would not mind the Lions drafting. I mean, they had a monstrous O-line last year. You saw what they did to Notre Dame. Any of those guys can play in the NFL, I think, and you know, I think any of them would be a good pick. Now, whether or not they're good at number 5, that kind of value, that remains to be seen. You know, and it's been discussed that maybe the Lions will trade up or trade down to try and secure one of those linemen or potentially garner more picks for a bigger, deeper draft. You know, and it remains to be seen because there's all sorts of info flying around right now. Nobody really knows what's going on. It's kind of fun. There's a little bit of mystery to the draft this year that maybe isn't usually there, especially at that top end, you know, that top 5. Is so fluid, it could go in any number of directions. Now, you know, you look at a Jordan and an Ansah, and you put them next to, a Fairley and a Sioux, that definitely raises the profile of your defensive line. And, you know, like you were saying, I mean, even when we drafted Fairley, it was because he was the best player available. And it was nice because he was rated as arguably the number two prospect in that draft. And we ended up getting him at 13. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen this year where one of these top rated guys, you know, just keeps falling. And, you know, maybe a Fisher falls in our lap or a Lane Johnson falls in our lap. But regardless, I think we're going to get a quality player at number five. That's the good news. The bad news is it might not be in the position we're looking for. And, you know, granted, we have holes in all three of those areas. You know, the secondary, even though we've made tons of moves recently, I mean, we signed Glover Quinn, re-signed Delmas, re-signed Houston. You know, you look at that, and they're certainly shoring things up. And, you know, the secondary's been a glaring weakness for years. But we also drafted three corners last season who have, you know, had varying levels of success, but they were all rookies, and it takes a little time to adjust to the NFL game. But, you know, you look at what we could do as far as making a plus group as far as the defensive line concerned, like an elite group, like you were saying, and it is tempting. I mean, when they drafted Fairley, that's what we thought we were getting. But then things didn't really work out in the first 2 years. He showed flashes, but he battled injuries, and we never really saw that, you know, pin your ears back and get after the quarterback with the Vandenbosch and Averill, Fairley and Sue in the middle. It never really came together the way that, you know, I think Martin Mayhew and Jim Schwartz kind of envisioned. But when you have a guy like an Ansa who can maybe make that happen, I think, you know, that's what Schwartz was so successful with when he was in Tennessee. They got great pressure off the edge and forced a lot of turnovers. And, you know, you look at what the potential we could do with an Ansa or a Jordan, who's very highly rated out of Oregon. He can play in the 3-4 or the 4-3. You plug one of those guys in, and maybe we don't need an elite corner anymore just because we're getting so much pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So, I mean, that remains to be seen. Listeners, let us know what you think. Who you think the Lions should take, whether or not they should trade up or down. 517-355-9527 or toll-free at 877-952-7870. And it's not just the Lions pick that we're interested in today. I mean, you look at basically just the landscape of this draft, and this might be the first year in quite some time where a running back does not go in the first round. It's actually a 49-year streak where a running back has been selected in the first round, and this year the crop is it's being a little slighted by draft analysts. Only one real potential pick in the first round as far as running backs go, and that's Eddie Lacy out of Alabama. Now, USA Today rated Le'Veon Bell as their top back, but most analysts have Lacy going well before Bell, and most backs going in the third to fifth round range. Now, part of that is just a relatively weak crop of backs, I suppose, but I think a bigger portion of that is just the fact that the running back position has really declined in importance in the NFL. You don't see teams spending you know, the kind of picks and money on these players that they used to, just because we've kind of gotten away from one singular back. I mean, unless you're Adrian Peterson, there isn't really a team that has just one guy and they're going to give him the ball every single time. And, you know, obviously Adrian Peterson is an alien, so it works out for the Vikings. But usually everybody else, we're kind of moving towards that two-back system sort of setup. So you see teams kind of wait around. And with as many guys who have come out of nowhere and produced as running backs in the NFL, maybe you take a flyer on a guy in the third round instead of using that coveted first-round draft pick, because NFL franchises, they really do covet those first-round draft picks because you really never know what that could turn into. So you look at that, most people have Lacy going either to a team like the Rams in the late first round or waiting again till that second round. Alex, do you see a running back going in the first round, or do you think it's going to wait till day two?
Sure, you know, you don't see the Chris Johnson, the early picks like we've seen in years past, but I could definitely see a running back going in the first round. Yes, it may be a little undermined this year with other backs, but I still think it's more of the idea that there are some really, really talented offensive tackles and some, you know, pretty solid reports coming out of the combine. So a lot of these positions are, you know, based mainly off statistics and, you know, and they're all mock drafts. So,
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if a team's really in need for running back. They think a team might scoop Eddie Lacy. Not to say that Eddie Lacy is not a first-round pick, but it may be purely based on need.
Right, and, you know, when you look at the last few seasons, the backs that were taken in the first round, I mean, you look at last year, Trent Richardson goes third overall, Doug Martin goes 31st to the Bucks, and then David Wilson went 32nd to the Giants. And people could probably argue that Doug Martin was more productive than Trent Richardson. So, you know, it really is a crapshoot as far as running backs are concerned. Not that Trent Richardson was bad at all. But I think, honestly, all three of those guys show that maybe it is worth taking a back in the first round. I'm sure the Buccaneers are not regretting spending a first-round pick on Doug Martin because he was incredibly productive for them in his rookie year. And then, you know, the year before that, in 2011, Mark Ingram was the lone running back taken. The year before that, C.J. Spiller, Ryan Matthews, and Javid Best. I'd say you're 1.5 out of 3 there as far as, you know, successful picks. Unfortunately, Javid Best, with the concussion problems, hasn't really been able to produce at the level that I'm sure Lions fans would hope. 2009, Knowshon Moreno, Donald Brown, Chris Beanie Wells. Maybe 0 for 3 there. I don't know. That's tough to judge. And then the year before that, 2008, this was the big year for running backs. You had Chris Johnson at 24, Rashard Mendenhall at 23, Felix Jones at 22, Jonathan Stewart at 13, and Darren McFadden at 4. And Chris Johnson has been the most successful out of those running backs, and he was the lowest of those first-round picks. So I feel like if you're a late first-round team and you have a need at running back, it seems to be proven that taking one there is going to work out for you. It's a good spot to take a running back. You're at the end of the first round. By then, the pay scale has kind of decreased to a manageable level, so you're not going to be, you know, throwing gobs and gobs of money at your pick if he's a running back. So I could see Lacy going in the first round. You know, as much as this draft is being won in the trenches with the big boys, I still see a running back continuing that streak. That might be the one that's more impressive than the Red Wings 21 season playoff streak. 49 years of a running back going in the first round. That is pretty dang impressive. Now, there's certainly some other questions here. And, you know, the one guy who I think has garnered more off-the-field attention than maybe on-the-field attention this last year, Manti Te'o. Now, most people didn't think he would be a first-rounder, especially after the whole catfishing thing sort of blew up. And, wow, that seems like it was ages ago, doesn't it? I mean, it was just a few months ago, but it seems like it was forever ago. And I think Manti Te'o was hoping it feels that way. But, you know, you look at how he performed at the combine. He ran a 4.840, which is pretty slow, even for a middle linebacker. And, of course, he got destroyed in the national championship game versus Alabama. But at the same time, he's been interviewed with quite a few franchises, and they all had good things to say. Alex and listeners, do you see him being a first-round pick? And if you do, what kind of team do you think would stand to gain the most by drafting him?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that, I think, has to ride on Michigan State's season. You know, Le'Veon Bell, sure, in a 1,000-yard back, had probably a slightly better season than last year, debatable. But the thing about it is that although his combine numbers have shown that he has some upside to him, I would just say that Eddie Lacy, the hype of Alabama, you know, him being that prototypical Alabama back, I think that's just going to hype it up. And I don't think Le'Veon Bell will make it over.
Yeah, but I'm actually talking about Manti Te'o. Do you see him going in the first round, or do you see him just kind of falling off?
Yeah, Manti Te'o, I mean, the thing about Te'o is, I mean, he kind of falls in the same situation as, you know, a player that doesn't have good combine numbers. Yes, you know, his production shows at Notre Dame that he can't continue that. And although his combine numbers may not show that, you know, comparing him to another player, although another player's combine numbers may not show that he can make it in the NFL, but it's the intangibles of statistics and then the intangibles of Te'o's situation that puts it all down. Can this guy be productive in the NFL? Yes. Will he let other outside factors get to him? You can't say. So I think it's worth the risk. I think it is worth a first-round pick.
Okay. Now, as far as linebackers are concerned, I think I would take Alec Ogletree out of Georgia. 11 times out of 10 before I took Manti Te'o. Now, you know, you look at Te'o, and obviously he was the story of the season last year for Notre Dame, and the story of the offseason too, but, you know, for good and bad reasons. And, you know, you look at that kind of baggage, and apparently he's not really showing ill effects of it in these interviews, or teams would maybe be saying that, although you have to take everything teams say with a grain of salt before the NFL draft, because they are all trying to pull one over on each other. It is a nice game of cat and mouse as far as, you know, who's picking when and who's picking who where. But, you know, you look at him, and if he can kind of put that behind him, I guess he would be a productive player. I don't know if I would spend a first-round draft pick on him unless I was a very established franchise like a New England Patriots, like a Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, maybe even the New York Giants, or even the Baltimore Ravens, who pick at number 32. That would be perfect, you know, the last pick of the first round. So, you know, you look at a guy like Te'o, if he goes to a place where there's, you know, established veteran leadership and a good structure in place, and really this goes for any draft prospect, but Te'o especially with all this off-the-field garbage, you know, he's going to have to sort it out, get in line and sort of just do his part and, you know, maybe stay away from the media for a few months, as hard as that will certainly be, because you know they're going to be coming after him. But, you know, when you look at his numbers in the combine, they aren't impressive. But people have unimpressive numbers in the combine all the time and then come out and take the league by storm. And I think personally it's more important what you do on the field rather than what you do at the combine, because, you know, anybody can have great measurables, I guess. And when you're making plays on the field, I think that's what teams should really be looking at. But as far as that baggage goes, I think that might drag him out of the first round, maybe to the very, very end of that first round. And Alex, this one's just for fun. If you're a betting man, if gambling were legal, would you say that Denard Robinson is going to get drafted before William Golston? Though they're both third to fifth round projections, who do you see going first and why?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a couple quarterbacks like Denard in college, you know, that's had a great run game, may not have the size, the physical tools. You look at Golston. I mean, he has just the upside to him. So I think Golston is the obvious choice here.
Okay.
Although we are Spartan fans.
Yeah, it's true. We do have to have that disclaimer there. And, you know, Denard is certainly an intriguing prospect. Obviously, he's got incredible speed and pretty good moves. But, I mean, I think any chances of him running trick plays where he's throwing the ball went out the window when he threw that pitch out at the Tigers game and put it in the dirt about 13 feet from the mound. I think that kind of ended all questions as to whether he could potentially throw the ball on a trick play. I think that one got ripped out of the playbook by every NFL coach. But, you know, he's certainly an intriguing prospect, even if he's just a return man. We've seen enough times that he can outrun people and definitely make people miss. And when you look at Golston, he's got limitless potential. You know, you wish that he would have really put it all together more on the field here at MSU. He was very productive, you know, in his sophomore season, and in that bowl game against Georgia, I think really showed people what he could be if he really puts it all together. And while he didn't do that here, I think, you know, depending on where he goes and what kind of organization he gets himself into, he could certainly develop and be a better pro than he ever was at the college level. I mean, he's still got tremendous upside. He's a monster of a man, you know, 6'7", 280. He's a big boy, and off the edge, you need a guy that size sometimes. Even if he's not getting sacks, he can get his hands up, bat down passes. You know, an incomplete pass is, you know, just as good as a tackle for loss, honestly, especially in today's NFL where everything is predicated on the pass. So, you know, you can get a guy who can disrupt an offense's rhythm like a Golston. I wouldn't mind taking a third-round flyer on a guy like Big Will. Now, the other question, you know, this one kind of goes hand in hand with Manti Te'o. Where is Tyrann Mathieu going to go? Now, he, of course, was the former LSU superstar who got into all sorts of trouble his senior season, or his last season, rather, got kicked off the team. You know, drug tests were failed, and now he's back, and he's looking to get into that mix in the NFL. Alex and listeners, where do you see the Honey Badger going? He doesn't care. I'm assuming he doesn't care. But where do you see him going in the draft?
Well, we've seen a lot of different players with drug tests and failings, and look where they've gone. I mean, they haven't gone where they're projected to go. So I think following the trend, it's looking like it's going to go later.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as, you know, usual guys with baggage go, it's certainly not he's not going to be a first-round pick. Contrary to what he had tweeted earlier in the week that he was having a party for his first-round pick, he canceled the party, by the way. I think he's going to go maybe day two, late day two, maybe early day three. It says here, third round is usually where teams start to take guys with baggage. That's where Maurice Claret went way back when. We saw how that worked out for the Broncos. But it's also where the Giants took Mario Manningham, who had some off-the-field stuff coming out of Michigan, and he ended up helping them win a Super Bowl. So it can go both ways. And, you know, from what we saw on the field, Matthew was a game changer. I mean, whether he was forcing fumbles or forcing more fumbles, the guy could get his hands on the ball. I mean, he was a great punt returner. He was a pretty incredible special teams player. And I mean, even if you can get a special teams ace, I think that's probably worth a third-round pick. I mean, you know, people forget about special teams in the grander scheme of things, but that can win and lose you games. I mean, that's the reason that Brad Wing, the junior punter from LSU, is foregoing his senior season, because he is an elite punter. I mean, that guy definitely won LSU several games in their run to the title game a few years ago. He's a valuable player, and if you have a guy like a Matthew who can come in and just kind of lock down the return game from the other team by making tackles and maybe contribute to your own return game, he's a worthwhile pick, especially for that third-round pick. Teams really value the first-round picks, but as you get deeper in the draft, they are definitely more willing to throw them around in trades. Now, you know, you look at some of this stuff, and the other big question as far as maybe the Lions are concerned, D. Milliner's shoulder. And, you know, like you said earlier, Alex, his stock has kind of dropped as the shoulder injury news has come out and, you know, all these surgeries that he's had recently. But, you know, you look at a guy who might drop to 10th, and he might not. Now, the torn labrum apparently is a pretty common injury in the NFL, and guys have come back to that just as strong as they were before. You know, with these injury red flags, it seems like he's a perfect fit for the Lions, where he can come in and struggle with injuries for a few years before he goes somewhere else and turns into a star. But, you know, I don't think it's going to keep him out of the top 10. I don't think anything's going to keep him out of the top 10. And I see maybe the Lions taking him. I would love it because, you know, we've never really had an elite corner, and he has the potential to become that. But at the same time, with those tackles on the board, if they are there, I think it's a no-brainer that we have to take one. And, you know, with Fairley a few years ago, it helped out. You know, we obviously took Reef last year. Last year is such an anomaly because we didn't have a, you know, top 13 pick, you know, for the first time since, you know, Matt Millen decided, hey, maybe I should be a GM of a team. But you know, you look at what the Lions could do this year. It's an important draft because after last season, I think the fans are kind of getting restless. You know, you taste the playoffs once, and it seems like, wow, this is attainable. We can do this every year. And then you have a 4-12 season like the one we did last season, and, you know, the wheels kind of fall off. So I think it's important to capitalize on this draft, make the right choices, and it's not just that first pick. We have to start getting some production from the guys we pick later in the draft, and I know it's going to take a few years for those guys to develop maybe, but even if we just see a glimpse of something from one of these late-round selections, and you know, just the depth of the draft seems to be okay. I mean, there's no, you know, skill position players that are setting the world on fire, but there's certainly a lot of solid players, especially on defense and especially in the trenches, that we need. I mean, you know, you look at Ronnell Lewis getting arrested the other day. That might open up another spot on the defensive line that we need to fill. So it seems like the trenches are where we should focus. But at the same time, if you have a corner of the caliber of a Milliner, it's tough to pass up. So give us a call. Let us know what you think the Lions will do. 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. And this seems like a natural spot for a break. We'll take another quick break. Stay tuned for more sports talk here on WKAR AM 870.
Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in today. Here's the weather forecast for mid-Michigan. Partly sunny, with a chance of light rain this afternoon. We'll have a high near 48 degrees. Overnight, mostly clear skies, with lows in the lower 30s. A mostly sunny day on Friday, with highs in the upper 50s. And for Saturday, mostly sunny, with highs in the mid-60s.
On the next Fresh Air, Mad Men. I've been watching this season, and I have so many questions about what's happening to Don Draper and Megan and Don Draper's new mistress. I just got to pose those questions to the creator of Mad Men, Matthew Weiner. We'll feature that interview with Matthew Weiner on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, today at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR. And welcome back to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Now, the draft, of course, is tonight. There's all sorts of questions and directions we could go. We discussed who we think the Lions will pick. Now, as far as predictions go as to who they will, in fact, pick, I think it'll end up being hopeful. I'm hoping it ends up being Lane Johnson. I'm hoping that one of the tackles falls. And, you know, for weeks I've been trumpeting D. Milliner, and I still think he might be the best player there. But as far as defensive knee or as team needs go, I think maybe a Lane Johnson would fit the bill, just because it would really be fortunate if one of those tackles fell out of the top three. And, you know, depending on whose mock draft you look at, it could happen or it could not, you know. And, you know, even if we draft down and garner more picks. Now, Alex, what do you think about that? What do you think if we draft down, maybe get another pick in the first round, maybe get a high second round pick? Would you be in favor of moving down and just waiting for a player to fall to us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of like trying to maybe swoop in and take a high second round pick, but who would you ideally get? You're not going to get a running back after signing Bush. You're not going to get a great offensive tackle because, you know, the prospects fall off. So yeah, I think that if an offensive tackle is available, I'd say, even with that fifth spot, my philosophy, which I don't know if the Lions are going to follow with this, is
right.
Take the best player available always. You can fill your needs. You may not be ideally what you have. You may not have ideally what you want with the team or even through free agency, but you take the best player available, and then you fill the holes in other rounds. Can they get an offensive tackle in another round that's going to be as good as Backus? No. But can they fill the hole temporarily? I think yes. So for me, I would pick the best player available. Will the Lions do that? I'm not so sure.
Well, I mean, that's you know, apparently been their philosophy over the last few seasons. And, you know, they have a tendency to kind of fall in love with players, whether it is a job at best or what have you. But, yeah, you know, taking the best player available has been their strategy. And, you know, certainly up until this season, it was looking like it was really working. And Fairley is just kind of starting to scratch the surface of what he can do. And with him and Sue in the middle, that definitely puts the defensive line in a better place. But as far as trading down, you know, I still think you could potentially get one of these Alabama linemen somewhere in the first round. I mean, you know, you've got the DJ Fluker, you've got Chance Warmack, you've got Barrett Jones. I mean, it seems like they're everywhere. So I think, you know, maybe you move down to the late teens or something if someone's offering. Maybe you get a few more picks, and then you can start building that depth. And, you know, if you're sitting at number five and none of the players you want are there, maybe you can try and get somebody to take a flyer on Geno Smith at number five. Hopefully there is a franchise out there that is so desperate for a quarterback that they are going to move into that number five spot. Now, I mean, you've got the Bills at number eight. They're looking like they're probably going to take Ryan Nassib from Syracuse because they just hired the Syracuse coach, Doug Marrone. So, you know, you look at that, and maybe somebody tries to sneak ahead of them and get Nassib before they do. And, you know, five is before eight in this draft order, so it's definitely a possibility. So, you know, certainly tons of options. Be sure to tune into the draft or even just keep up with it because I'm sure there'll be updates everywhere. The first round is the only round tonight. The second two rounds, I believe, are Friday night, and then the rest of the draft finishes off Saturday because they just wanted to get as much primetime coverage as they potentially could. I remember the days when it was just Saturday and Sunday. It basically took up my whole weekend, but this might be a little bit better as far as time management. Now, moving on from the NFL, because I think we've talked about that enough, and I'm sure we'll talk about it tomorrow too. The Red Wings moving up in the playoff race here. They beat the LA Kings 3-1. Jordan Tutu scored the go-ahead goal, and then Johan Franzen added another one later on the power play. They win 3-1, two games left in the season. They're sitting pretty in eighth place, 1 point ahead of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who also have two games left. And Columbus actually plays Dallas tonight. Now, Dallas is in 10th, so you have the 9th and 10th place teams facing off tonight. I think if Dallas wins, that really helps out the Red Wings' cause, because Dallas only has 48 points, whereas we have 52. So, you know, with that Dallas game looming, of course, you know, that could potentially be very important if Dallas does win. But I think, you know, you look at if we can knock Columbus maybe out of the picture sooner, the better. You know, the fewer variables there are on the last day of the season, as far as the Red Wings are concerned, the better. I think, you know, they have this game against Nashville coming up tonight. You know, you look at the Predators, they just snapped an 8-game losing streak. You look at the roster, they're not a very good team. They're injury riddled. They've really fallen off this year. I think they had higher expectations than what they finished. But again, a lockout year, anything can happen, as we've seen, because the Red Wings are struggling to make the playoffs. I mean, this is like stop the presses, guys. It's been 21 years since we've, you know, failed to make it. So I think hopefully they get it done tonight and, you know, put themselves in an even better position to make the playoffs. It's nice to control your own destiny, and that's what they've been able to do these last few games. They haven't faltered so far. And I think they should be able to hold on versus the Predators, knock on wood. And then hopefully they can close things out at Dallas in that season finale. But just a 48-game season, and it's been a mad scramble. And for as much as people think that the Blackhawks are going to walk away with the Stanley Cup, or I guess they'd be skating away with the Stanley Cup, you know, I don't think it's cut and dry, because it's the NHL. And in the NHL playoffs, any team can win. And, you know, we've seen it before when we were the top dogs and we get knocked off. But, you know, I think a Detroit team that has their backs against the wall for the last week and a half of the season and kind of, you know, makes a run and gets into the playoffs is probably the most dangerous low seed you could possibly face off against. So I think if we do, in fact, make it, I think Chicago might be a little unhappy to see us. I think of all the teams that are competing for that eighth and final spot, I think the Wings are the ones that everyone would least want to see in that first round. You know, all it takes is a hot team and a hot goalie. And, you know, they've been rattling off wins here, 4-0 and 3-1. If we keep things going and, you know, win out going into the playoffs, I mean, that's basically the definition of momentum. And that's what you don't want when you're going into that first round series, because, again, anything can happen. Now, some more news. The NCAA playoff was announced yesterday, or the site of it was announced yesterday, actually. And Jerry World, the Cowboys Stadium down in Arlington, Texas, was chosen to host the first NCAA playoff championship, and that is set for January 12th, 2015. We're moving away. The BCS is dead. Thank goodness. You know, we're moving on. It seems like the Rose and the Sugar Bowls will be hosting the, you know, respective semifinal matchups. And those are set, of course, for January 1st, New Year's Day of 2015. Now, there's sites in the future that have not been determined. Alex, what do you think about putting the first one in Cowboy Stadium?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great because, you know, that Cowboy tradition, that history, I think that will not only excite the players and the college athletes, you know, competing in that game. But I think fans would love to see that history of Texas in football, that history of Cowboy Stadium and the talent and the kinds of legends that have played in that stadium.
Yeah, and, you know, even in addition to that, and that's a good point, because if there's one state that is absolutely over the moon about football, it's Texas. I mean, Texas high school football has been the subject of countless movies and TV shows, and with good reason. People go gaga over that stuff. But in addition to that, I mean, you look at, you know, just the sheer logistics of that stadium. You know, it's a billion-dollar facility. It's, you know, TV screen is arguably bigger than the field. You know, that is the cutting edge as far as stadiums go. And I really think it's no surprise that Dallas was chosen, or Arlington, rather, was chosen to host it. And, you know, it's not a surprise. And with good reason. It's a fabulous looking facility. I mean, you watch it on TV and it's just it's a monstrosity in the best way. So, you know, hats off to Jerry Jones. I'm sure he'll be bragging about that for the rest of his days. And with good reason, because, you know, finally we are moving away from the BCS, arguably the most controversial method of deciding a champion in sports history. What do you guys think about the playoff? Let us know. 517-952-7, toll free at 877-952-7870. So, you know, you look at that, it's slated to change, thank goodness. Now, as far as you know, the NCAA playoff is football. You know, it's uncreative name, the NCAA football playoff. But I don't think they needed anything fancy like BCS. I'm happy we're moving away from that bowl championship series. How it affects the other bowl games remains to be seen. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad move. I'm in favor of it. And when you look at the business that is college football, I think adding that kind of playoff atmosphere the last few weeks of the season will only serve to bolster that already huge fan base and the money-making machine that is college football. Now, in some other news, and we discussed this earlier in the week, Alex, Barry Sanders ended up winning that Madden vote. He is going to be on the cover of Madden 25.
Great time 25. To be a Lions fan, too, though, because, you know, you have Denard, a Michigan fan in general, the state of Michigan. You have Denard with NCAA football.
Yep.
You have Barry Sanders, and then you had Calvin Johnson last year.
Yeah, and Barry Sanders is actually featured a little bit on the NCAA football cover last year, along with RG3. So, I mean, we're dominating right now as far as video games go. You know, we're good on the digital gridiron. Maybe need some improvement on the actual gridiron, but we'll see if that happens. So, you know, congrats to Barry Sanders. I'm sure he doesn't really care that much, but, you know, if he does, hats off. You deserve it. Obviously a legend. And, you know, you look at Adrian Peterson, and I think he tweeted that if anyone was going to beat him, it better have been Barry. And I really think it makes sense. As far as players who play like a video game, Barry Sanders is probably at the top of your list. Now, I know people will argue that maybe Bo Jackson was a more legendary video game character, but Barry Sanders, you know, arguably the shiftiest back in NFL history, certainly one of the greatest highlight reels you can watch. You know, go check it out on YouTube if you haven't. You know, if you haven't seen a Barry Sanders highlight in the last 6 months, you know, go spend an hour or two just watching all sorts of crazy things that he did on the field. The things he was capable of, just disgusting, really. I mean, the guy could break multiple ankles on one play and, you know, make nine guys miss on 1 7-yard gain. And it would be the most spectacular 7-yard gain you've ever seen. So, you know, as far as the Lions go, at least they got some good news there. We'll see what they do in tonight's draft. Again, it remains to be seen whether they'll go with a tackle or with a defensive end, you know, or even a corner. Who knows? Maybe they'll draft another wide receiver because we haven't done it in a few years, and we need to get back to the Matt Millen era of just drafting wide receivers regardless of where they fall on the mock draft list and regardless of what kind of talent they have. But, you know, you look at the Lions draft history and it is, it's ugly. Well, let's be honest here. You know, we've had some hits with Fairley and Sue and Stafford, but we've certainly had our fair share of misses. And while the Millen era still has that black cloud hanging over the franchise, it's starting to dissipate. Even with last season, you know, certainly taking a step back from the year before, I think it's clear that they're on the road to becoming one of the elite teams of the NFC North, hopefully, and the NFC in general. You know, when you have a guy like Stafford and you have a wideout like Megatron, you're never out of a game, but at the same time, we saw last year it wasn't going to win us many either. So, you know, I think if we can bulk up on the lines, it's going to help us out. Now, of course, they only have one pick tonight, Granted, they could trade up and get another pick in the first round, but it's just going to be that one pick at number five. So, you know, tomorrow we will certainly break down who they pick and why and how it all shook out. Definitely join us tomorrow for more coverage of the NFL draft. We'll talk about rounds two and three. And, of course, the first round results from tonight. You have been listening to WKAR East Lansing AM 870. Join us again tomorrow at 105. Go have yourself a safe and pleasant evening, and I will hear from you tomorrow. Thank you.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.